Arts and Adventure summits the airwaves. This is the Ogden Arts and Adventure Show with Oberndorfer and Long. I'm R. Brand Long, along with
Todd Oberndorfer.
We are your hosts for the greatest arts and adventure podcast in all the land. I'm going to say probably the universe. So joining us today, we have in the corner, which nobody puts Brett in a corner, Brett Walker, correct?
Yes.
Brett Walker, brewer, head brewer.
Head brewer, yeah.
Utah. And then I don't know if we, what do we call you, Carson? The founder?
Yeah, founder, owner.
Owner?
Owner.
Do you call yourself CEO?
That'll work too.
Wow. Yeah. I got to add some
I kind of do all the jobs.
Okay, founder, yeah. CEO.
Head sweeper.
Head sweeper. Okay.
Whatever needs done, right?
Yeah, he does everything really.
Oh, that's weird. It's doing a slow motion effect on you on camera three.
Oh.
That is wild. All right, Carson, I think we fixed your camera. So
perfect.
We're back to you. But all things Utah, essentially, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so, well, you're celebrating a company party tonight, we found out. So what is the occasion? What's going on?
So we do a company party every quarter.
Oh, just like once a week?
It's a party every day.
Every day, it is. No, we'd like to close for a night and to say thanks to all of our employees. You know, we got three departments, the kitchen, the front of house, and the brewery, and it's a night where we can all, like, hang out and relax and have fun, and Social Axe will be the third year we're doing it.
Yeah.
And so 2 years ago, the winner, I got like this cool axe that's engraved with Social Axe and Utah, and then we put the plaque of the person who won it in what year.
Yeah.
So we've got two winners.
Two wieners of that.
And we'll see who's going to be the third wiener tonight, right?
Okay.
It'll be Brett, right?
I hope so.
So, who won?
So first year was Paul, our bartender.
Okay.
And then Kima, our host, won last year.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them first time ever showing up and throwing.
Isn't that wild?
So it's anybody's game.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's super easy. Have you been practicing in the off season to just like throw things off?
No.
No.
I pitch with my kid baseball, but that's nothing similar. Okay. So.
No, it's not. I've been, and in fact, I was mentioning before, I emceed one of their competitions, and I had no idea what I was talking about, and they never invited me back.
Competition, like they took a serious competition.
No, so it's on ESPN, like it's on sports channels, like,
it's huge.
And they can hit the right spot on the board whenever they want. It's wild.
They're really good.
See, I used to love watching those lumberjack competition shows. I don't know if they still do that.
It's sort of similar.
You run on the log,
and they have to
cut climb up the tree, and those are so much fun.
Totally different game.
It's a totally different game.
Axe play. There's a little axe play.
There is a little axe play.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. And there's different rotations. Like there's the 1.5 rotation versus the two or
and
whatever.
There's like a one arm, a two arm.
Yeah.
They do all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah. So
I just try to make it stick.
Yes.
Try to make it stick.
Yep.
That's what they tell you. It's like, yeah. Well, that's good. Okay. Well, have fun tonight.
How many
years are we celebrating Utah in Ogden or in business, I guess?
March 28th will be our 5-year anniversary. So we are really excited. We're going to be obviously open all day. I'm going to be there. Brett's going to be there. Anna, everybody that's been there for, you know, since opening. We're going to be doing $5 pitchers. Alicia, one of our executive chefs, is cooking 500 cupcakes. She's awesome.
Cool.
So we'll be handing those out all day. We'll have random prizes.
Are those beer cupcakes?
No, I don't think they're beer cupcakes, but they'll be decorated in Utah colors.
In my heart, they're going to be beer cupcakes.
Yes. You can have a beer with your cupcake. Yes. Just a big party all day to say thanks because 5 years is big.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the pandemic's been two of those years, so just being able to keep the lights on and keep everything rolling and, you know, grow
That is so true. So when you went, how long were you open? 2 years until you hit the
1 year.
1 year.
So we were gonna like have a giant 1 year party, like kind of shut down Grand Avenue kind of thing, literally the day before St. Patty's Day, because we were like, oh, St. Patty's Day is gonna be busy, right?
Yeah.
And that's when Rudy Gobert shut down the NBA
with
COVID, and then the next day we were like, we'll try, but it was dead. And then we closed on the 17th the next day, and that's when that earthquake happened. So we had COVID. Close, earthquake, and it's like, man, this is not a good 1 year. But
those are wild times.
Yes.
For everyone involved, let alone trying to operate a business.
Oh, yeah, it was tough.
And then how did you navigate the pandemic? Because you have a restaurant. It's a social thing. I was working retail at the time. I couldn't stay home. And so, I mean, we did close for, I think, 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We did orders. I was literally driving my car around, dropping off orders to people's houses. So how did you navigate that?
So we obviously closed that first, the restaurant had to close that day.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have our beer store in the back, and the beer store stayed open. and just spreading the word that all of our packaged beers are there to come down and support, keep us rolling. We kept that beer store open every day, and people came in, they bought a lot of beer to go. That slowly let what's in the tanks be packaged, you know, not nearly the speed we do when we're operational, mm-hmm. but that beer store kept us afloat, you know, for about 4 to 6 weeks. And I think the first week of May is when they open things back up. And we decided to do to go, but we're not really designed for to go. Our
right.
kitchen's tiny and we put out 5 plates at a time, but at least it got people back at work and we got the food going. And then about a couple weeks after that is when they did the 6-foot separation. So basically half of our tables, you know, were closed.
Yep.
And then just slowly started going from there. And then after a couple months, things opened back up again. And yeah, it was slow. It was a good learning for me because when I opened up, I've never ran a restaurant before or a brewery. And when you open, everybody's telling you what you need, hire this, buy this, get this software, buy this equipment. And when you open, you're just like holding on for dear life, right? So after a year being able to like completely close and now reopen, I could be like, you know what? I don't really need that, or I do need this. And it really helped us learn how lean we can actually run as a business and what we do and don't need. Mm-hmm. And so in that part, it was really good because I basically got to open twice.
Yeah.
And so far it's been really good because I know what we need to go as lean as possible, you know?
So no restaurant experience, no beer brewing experience. So
professionally.
Yes, professionally. I brewed home.
Professionally, okay. Yeah.
I homebrewed for 10 years or more and did like homebrew competitions and did good in those. And then my friends opened Park City Brewery. So I shadowed with them for a couple years. And had this idea in about 2017. And just put my thoughts down and took a class with Portland State University. It's kind of how to, not to brew beer, but how to build the business of it, like a business plan and working with making labels and the TTB and all this stuff that's incorporated with that. And then found my uncle-in-law, Jack, and it proposed to, hey, do you want to be partners? Help me finance this thing. And he said yes. And him and his wife, Susie, are my two partners. And, you know, they helped us build it. And we did basically all the construction ourselves except for electrical and HVAC and found that old building. It was built in 1906, so had to cut out the floors and haul out like 130,000 pounds of concrete and basically lived in construction for 18 months during the winter. I've never been so cold. But it was a hell of a process. It was a lot of fun, and it's very rewarding to see, you know, when it's full and our beer's on shelves and just what, you know, what the difference between a thought now we're actually operating. It's been really fun.
But buying that old space though, that's everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So worth all of the 18 months. I didn't go through it with you, but I'm telling you as somebody who, I mean, I live for those old spaces in Ogden, and elsewhere, but Ogden is famous for them.
Yep.
And so thank you for saving it. Thanks for making it yours.
Yes. It's,
yeah, what was the real estate agent like when they're showing you the space? Like, okay, well, we got this space. I don't know.
So we rent it. So I wish I owned it, but we do rent it. But the landlord is very nice in seeing my vision and seeing what the potential of the building could be, and, you know, taking a giant saw to the floor and cutting out that and making it, you know, usable space for what my vision was.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just amazing what that building's gone through and what it is now, you know. And the two floors above us is still open, so we don't know what's going to happen there. But
That history of that building is just amazing to me. Yeah. Just being able to work in there.
Yeah, walk us through some of the history.
Going to do that?
You can be talking on that.
Yeah.
So the building, since it's so old, it was back to when World War One. They were building or making all the uniforms for the war, and we were right on the train line, so they would send out all the uniforms for World War One, World War Two.
World War One? That's taking it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after the wars were done, they didn't need to use the building anymore for that. So closed down and another shop came in and they were making lingerie. So it was called Lovely Lady Lingerie.
I have to interject real quick.
Yes.
When they closed, they made garments for the LDS Church.
Oh, that was first.
Yes.
Damn it. I missed
and
that
And they
one.
Did that for about 20 years.
Yeah.
And then the church decided to do their own.
Yes. And then it went into lingerie. And then after they left...
this is my favorite transition.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. I mean, I like the lingerie
part.
No, I know.
Parts, I ruined it.
But
it should have
went. Oh, no. It's just, it's even stronger now, but I do like the...
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. The uniforms... To the LDS clothing, to the...
Yep. And then there's still a company that does embroidery and other textile stuff next to us as well. So there's always been that kind of style in that building.
Awesome. Yep. Wild. Wild. And then how did you, because you're, I don't know what you call it, all the brewery stuff sits down mm-hmm. a level.
Yep.
So, but you can see it. So yep. did you dig all that out, like knock walls down? Like how, what did you do exactly?
So there was a basement below us.
Uh-huh.
About 8-foot ceilings. And originally, I wanted the brewery and everything to be the same level as the restaurant, so not in the pit like it is now.
Gotcha.
But
yeah.
Structurally, it could not hold that equipment. It was we would have to put so much reinforcement downstairs to hold those tanks. So one of the guys, a contractor there, is like, why don't we just cut the floor, pour a new subfloor, we can angle it like you need for breweries, you know, to go to the trench mm-hmm. drains. And we're like, that's not a bad idea. So we talked to an architect and a structural engineer, and they said, yeah, that could work. And that's why we did it. So that the weight of all those tanks are sitting on the actual ground.
Yeah.
And then it also really made it awesome to be able to have a bird eye view of the brewery.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love looking down into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did it add any, issues sort of dealing with that? Because if you plan it on being on the main level and ended up being downstairs, what was the add to make that work?
So there's pros and cons. The cons are all of the ingredients we use to brew with. Now when we're done using them, like the malt and the hops, we have to get it up and out.
Oh,
and
the thousands of pounds
every single batch. And so we had to have a special brew house design that has a side door that when the spent grain comes out, it goes into a giant auger and it goes into a 4-inch pipe. And then that pipe, we've gone all the way out to our loading dock, which will fill like a giant tote. And then the farmers come and get that. So that's how we get all of the grain out. And then we have to have process piping to transfer our finished product up into our canning line. When you have a packaged beer and it's in the bright tank, that's the last home of the beer before it goes into either a keg or a can. That's where it gets the carbonation. That's why it's called bright. And it also helps the clarity. That's really why it's called bright. But you want to have your packaging line right next to that. The shorter the distance, the better. We have to push it almost, 37 to 42 feet. And as the beer travels, it gets warmer, and every time it changes in elevation, the pressure changes just enough. So it made our canning situation difficult at the beginning to dial it in. I mean, we're good now, but it was just a lot of little things that we had to learn over time. So those are probably the two biggest, getting out the spent items and then packaging, having to push that beer so far.
But now it's a unique facility.
It's very unique. Tours are awesome.
Yeah, tours are fun down there.
Yeah, it's amazing when people come and we get to explain the process and they're like, man, you fit all of this right here? And it's like, yes. Yeah.
Where'd you get your name?
So I originally wanted to be called Traverse Brewing Company, because if you live in Utah, you're traversing everywhere, whether you're driving, skiing, hiking. Yep. And so I'm like going down the road with Traverse, and I start working with artists to get logos, and then I go to get my trademark, and I found out that Traverse City, Michigan is spelled the exact same way, and there's about 12 different breweries that say Traverse, so there is no way to ever get a copyright. And so I'm like, dang it, I really like that. And one of the artists just grabbed Utah and Ogden and put Utah in one of the random little things. And I was taking the trademark class at the same time, and you can't like copyright Mount Ogden or Utah Beer Company because they're so common.
Yeah.
But they're like, if you make up your own word, it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like weird enough that it might stick.
Yeah.
And so that's where we got Utah from. And then I loved having the state on the logo. So if you look at, I think, Epic, Proper, a handful of breweries have the state of Utah on their logo or their labels. They did when they had when bottles were popular. But we're sitting there like, well, I don't want to copy them. And my neighbor, Lisa, she's like, why don't you just turn the state sideways? And we're like, boom, because now you got the mountaintops. Yeah. And so if you look at our logo, only about half the people see it. It's just the state turned sideways.
You know, I noticed it the other day, actually, because we have the tin now on the van. And
yes.
I was looking at it. I'm like, wait, time out. Their logo.
Cause you got to.
Okay. I see what we're doing here. Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll see some people put the sticker, our stickers actually looking like it's Utah. I'm like, oh, that's not how our logo is. It's supposed to be tilted just a little bit. But
yeah. Well, I've heard that homebrewing and then jumping up to what do you call like
commercial
brewing is completely different. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, there's obviously you're brewing beer.
Yep.
But how did you transition? What did you learn in that process?
Just talking to other people that have done it. There's software that really helps you scale the recipe. Mm-hmm. But the very first time we used the equipment at UTOG, every place is different. You got elevation, you got water profiles, you just have the equipment itself. How does it heat? You know, it heats different at sea level than it does at altitude. So it really is just trial and error.
How much beer did you waste?
Knock on wood, we served every bit of our first batches. It was awesome. So we started with easy beers to make. We didn't make like really hard, complex beers, but
That's smart.
Yeah, we didn't dump any, and obviously, as any business, whatever you make gets better with time. So like every batch Brett does and I did, we critique each other. You know, like there's no hard feelings. Like, hey, this is a little cloudy, or this tastes funky, or let's try to do this next time. Like that's fun. One of the fun things about the job is every day is different. You can brew the same beer, you know, 30 times a year, but every day is different. You know what I mean? Something's going to happen. And that's what makes beer fun. So
just try and make each batch better and learn from that. And just the small things, really.
Have you been here from the beginning, Brett?
I came in 2.5 months after they opened.
Yeah.
So I was Carson's little helper for a long time. And then, of course, COVID happened. He got busy running everything else. So he knew that I could handle what needed to be done. So took over. So he was the head brewer, and I took over his position, really. So
Carson, are you still involved in current recipes and stuff? Or
Yep, we bounce ideas off each other all the time. And then we actually just got a really nice, call it homebrew, but a pilot batch system. So it does 10 gallons instead of 500. And so we just got that installed, and we've ran it three times. Taking notes, getting it dialed in. But what we're going to start opening up to the public soon is... I don't know how we're going to have like a sign-up sheet or some kind of lottery or prize, but let's say you have an idea for a beer or you're a home brewer. You say you get a day with Utah. So you come down, you design your beer with Brett and I, you brew it with us, you watch it ferment, and then we put it in a keg, and now it's on draft at Utah, so you and your friends can come down and try it.
I think Todd wants a Van Sessions brown.
Okay.
We've talked about that for a while. We have talked about that. It is definitely part of the culture of this show.
Nice.
14 years. And so, yeah, that sounds actually like a great idea. And it sounds like what an interesting program, too.
Yeah. I love it. There's a brewery in Phoenix where I used to live that does that. And it is so popular because, like, if you go and brew a beer, right, you're going to go home and tell your buddies and their friends, and they all want to try your beer.
Oh, of course.
So it helps me out because it gets people in my doors.
Yeah.
But it helps you out. You learn how to brew because you're into it. It helps us out because every time, like we just talked about, we do a brew, we take notes, we, you know, it might be the next greatest thing. We don't know. So it's a kind of a win-win for everybody, and we're really excited to start doing
it. How many of those can you do a year?
If it just depends on how fast we go through the beer. It's only going to produce maybe 60 to 70 pints. It's not huge, but it's enough to test it out. And it takes about 2 to 3 weeks for an ale, 5 to 6 for a lager. So about, I don't know, you could do
maybe six a year or something.
I'm hoping more than that.
We're hoping one a month is our goal.
Okay.
Our goal is to do one a month. I'd say April's when we're going to try to shoot for starting, maybe May. We just wanted to get one more under our belt to get everything dialed in before we embarrass ourselves in front of somebody else. So
let me show you how professional I am.
Okay,
very good.
Okay, so we're going. Today's first day of spring, so happy spring, everyone.
What? Are you serious?
Yep.
Where's the memo? Oh my god.
So happy spring, everyone. And so it's a good time to start thinking about what we're all going to be drinking in the spring and summer, right? And so I'm always curious about what's trending and what's leaving, and what are you sensing? What are you looking forward to for the spring? What are you hearing about? Clearly, you're never in this alone. All brewers are friends with brewers, right? And so, what are y'all talking about?
You want to?
Yeah. So right now, for us, we're gonna be bringing back our Mexican lager, of course, in May. But it takes a while to ferment, so we're gonna start that real soon. And then we have a few new IPAs coming out. But other than that, everybody's trying to go for the lighter beers. So we actually, Carson, do you want to talk about the brand new beer that's coming out for our anniversary? Yeah, we still have to wait for this.
Well, that's funny because I just heard that stouts were making a comeback. Is that true at all?
So they come back in the colder seasons. So they already came and went.
Yeah.
No, it's a seasonal beer. Yeah. I think of the browns and the stouts and all of this as seasonal beers. Like I drink it when it's cold.
They did come on strong in October, November, December. That's why we have these porters. You know, I've been drinking that darker stuff all season. But in the summertime, especially as soon as the temps get up, the lighter beers are where it's at. Okay. So
it's your lawnmower beers. Okay. You gotta build
lawnmower beers. Yeah. Okay, so you got a new beer coming.
Yeah, so we wanted something kind of like a, if you're at a table beer, like a session beer, so session lower, beer. Lower alcohol. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's kind of where a lot of, especially the younger drinkers are going, not heavy beers. Mm-hmm. And so we did a beer and it's called Happy Hour because we don't have Happy Hour in Utah, but now we do. Mm. So it's called Happy Hour. It's going to be right around 4%. It's an extremely light, easy drinking lager. The goal is like when you're golfing or boating or watching the baseball game, like that is, it's a fresh, bright label. Yep. And it's really good. We've brewed three times now, and the third time, we're like, yeah, this is it. And so
when's Happy Hour?
We're going to release on the 28th on our five-year anniversary. It'll be available at UTOG. We're really excited for it. Our sales team is really excited for it. And that's our big release on the 28th. And then...
good name.
Yes.
Good choice of names. Yes. I like it.
It's cool. We used like...
I can picture it now.
Have you guys, what's the movie I'm talking about with John Travolta, the disco, what's that called? Saturday Night Fever?
Yeah.
You know the logo in that?
Yeah.
We kind of use that font.
Nice.
And then in the dead center is a giant disco ball, so it's going to like pop at you on the can.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really fun, bright, happy can.
I like it.
And so we're really excited to release that.
Summer beers, man. Mowing the lawn or like get back from a hike and you're just like easy drinking beers. You got to sell a ton of that stuff, right?
You do. And that's our goal. Every time I've done like a lighter beer, like the Golden Grant or our Kolsch, it is way light compared to the stout.
Kolsch is really good, by the way.
But when you compare it to like a light beer, like I don't want to say the American beers, but like the Ultras, the Bud Lights, the Coors Lights, that is, you have drinkers that drink those and you have drinkers that do craft. And this beer is going to be a great gateway for those that, hey, let's dabble in a little bit of craft. You know what I mean? Let's try something local. And that's our goal with this is not only can you have more than one, that's what a session beer is, but to kind of maybe steal some of that audience.
Well, PBR has made a comeback because it was a drinkable beer after a backpacking trip or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just easy on the way down. So mm-hmm. perfect.
Did PBR ever really leave?
I know we kept it alive.
We did our best. All right. Well, speaking of.
Oh, yeah. Sounded good.
A little porter action. Okay. Very good. What's the future look like for Utah? Because your space is where it is. I toured UNA's a while back and it's effing huge. And even they had to. I mean, they can land an airplane in their cooler, but they had to expand, right?
Yes.
And so, like, is that something that interest you, or are you just like, nope, we're gonna keep it this way and do I don't know, what's your plans like for the future?
I would love to expand. That's what
don't look at me, you're the one. Well, I want to just brew I want to brew the beer. I want to make it really good for people to drink.
We do want to expand, and that was my whole goal in opening a brewery, was to have an awesome pub that's family friendly. That was important to me because I love all the bars and breweries in Salt Lake, but I had to get a babysitter to go to them. So my goal was to have a family friendly brewery so I can have a beer while my kid sits there. And we were able to do that, and so I love that aspect, but I also love the production side of it and getting in different stores and restaurants, and so we do want to continue to grow our production, and that's why we bought such a big system to start out with. But in 2016, 17, 18, the craft beer industry from like 1999 up until that point is growing 20 to 25% every single year. Mm-hmm. After COVID, it's gone down to like 8. And then last year was the first time where craft actually went down a little bit. Mm. So it's made everybody in the industry kind of, you know, what are we going to do now? It's not lighting off like a rocket ship like it did for 20 years. So our goal is, yes, to still expand.
Do you know why that happened?
Or what? It's just generation. There's still
Gen Z.
They're smoking a lot.
Well, we can't add THC to our stuff.
Oh, we cannot. Just listening to and reading.
We asked.
We went to a class last year.
We went to a class.
It's not there. Just a combination of, you know, people. There's still as much alcohol being sold in the U.S., but less of that is craft. So the seltzers, the vodkas,
that seltzers kind of took off.
That seem lighter. They're slowing down now. They definitely spiked. But I think there's a combination of something lighter that people think are healthier, even though it's still alcohol. But I think it's all this, everything just goes in waves, and beer is not going away at all. So I think those that are still brewing and want to mass produce have to find a way to keep that product fresh and appealing to a larger generation, because I know those of us that are like around 40 have no problem buying any craft beer because kind of we grew up with that, right? But the younger ones, they didn't really grow up seeking breweries. You know, we kind of, how do we get back in front of them? And I think that's a goal a lot of breweries are looking at right now, is how do we get those 25 to 32 to 35 year olds that didn't grow up with the brewery explosion that we did? How do we get that? Hmm. So,
where are you from?
I'm from Layton, Utah.
Yeah, but yeah. You moved away then?
Where did you I moved in 2003 to go to flight school in Florida.
Oh.
And okay. Then.
Where in Florida?
In Daytona Beach.
Okay.
So, did a year in Daytona and a year in New Smyrna.
Okay.
So.
Well, my in-laws live in Pensacola because my brother-in-law went to flight school there and because he's a Navy pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And visiting the town there, my first time there, of course, he's in the Navy and they're pilots. So they think they're yes. all that in a bag of Doritos, right?
Yeah.
But they, you know, he took us brew hopping through all the different breweries in Pensacola. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me so much of Ogden and 25th Street and like the, because they're all really old buildings.
Yep.
And they're just refurbished. And I thought, man, Ogden and Pensacola has a lot of, because it's a small town, but, but big, but like old, you know? And then all these cool buildings that were just made into breweries. And so I didn't know what other towns you'd visited and stuff, or like if you've done brew tours across the state.
Tell us about your R&D.
How did you research all this stuff?
So I was a commercial pilot, and I am again now, but I from 2005 till 16 I basically have been to a brewery in every single state in the country.
Well, hell, if you can fly to them, yes. let's go.
It makes it a lot easier, right?
So that was my, the 12 years I was doing that, I would always, on my overnights, if I had enough time, to go visit the local brewery.
Yeah.
And I'd try their beers. I would hopefully talk to their people. I'd look at their layout and just made mental notes of what I like and what I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And then moving around the country, I lived in Omaha for 4 years. My wife went to medical school there. Mm-hmm. We lived in Phoenix for another four for residency. And, being able to see what other states do with their breweries and restaurants. We came back to Utah in 2014, and I'd been used to what Arizona has and what Nebraska has and what I see in all my overnights, and Ogden was lacking. I mean, we had one brewery. Roosters is awesome, but we had one brewery for 700,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, north of Kaysville.
Yeah.
So I'm like, thank God Talisman opened.
Yeah.
And then we opened just after them, and there's room for seven more, like at least. And so that was my big thought process is, you know, we need more than one, two, three, four, or five. Like, let's keep
so
it rolling.
So really, I didn't know. Choices. I didn't know that. Yeah, choices.
Yes.
People like choices.
It's kind of, well, I thought, like, coffee shops were overrun 15 years ago, and apparently not, because they just keep opening more coffee shops,
yes.
more corners. I'm like, so I guess the same was with breweries. You could open more. And
people, because, I mean, when you go out to eat, you want to try different food. You want to try different beers. You might like this environment better than the other. Mine allows kids. Maybe the other one doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever fits your cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
That's people want options. And when I moved back in 14, we had one. And so I hope more breweries keep coming in and, you know, help Ogden grow, and that was one of my goals.
Mm-hmm. So. Todd, you want a Banyan Brewery anytime soon?
The full brewery. I think a brew is not a bad idea, though.
I would do maybe a restaurant and carry someone else's beer, like a Banyan rum. I do a rum bar, is what I would.
Oh,
do.
Rum bar. There you go.
Yeah,
I would go there.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd be part of that.
Do you have any hookups on rum barrels?
No.
I want to do this porter in a rum
barrel. Yeah, I did. That would be awesome. So apparently rum, like, I don't get. So apparently rum's hard to brew or distill, I guess, because like a lot of people don't like Ogden's Own doesn't do rum.
No, it's,
like people don't do rum. What? I didn't know.
You probably I don't know distilling side. Nope.
I don't know that much either. I just know you're right. Not a lot of places do a rum.
Yeah.
Like, it's very select, and those that do it well. So
I just thought if the fucking pirates could do it.
Like, yes.
If the pirates could drink it.
All you need is the sugar cane, right? Like,
yeah.
What are we doing? But it's so funny because I love Captain. I still drink Captain. It's my rum.
Yeah.
You're fancy. Fancy.
Well, that's just it. I tried to get really fancy and I downloaded a rum app and it like tells you like all the different kind of rums. You can actually, you try them and you rate them and you add them to your little thing, right?
So how'd your favorite one rate?
Not good. Not good. it basically said, you're a frat boy, okay? I'm like, no, there's no way.
That's so awesome.
But I can sip it, and I can taste the notes and the vanilla and the clove. Like, it's really, really good. And I'll taste these other rums, and it's like, they're just really strong.
I think.
And I'm like, wow, I can't believe people drink these things.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, that's my rum story.
That's cool.
I still drink Captain, even though it's got like a 3.5 out of... five stars or whatever.
Awesome. I'm glad you're still tasting around them.
Yeah, yeah, I am still tasting around. Yeah,
it takes time to collect rums
when I find new ones, which is hard to do in Utah.
Oh, yeah, you can't do it.
But if we go out of state and, like, we just went to Vegas and I was looking at all of their rum options and stuff because it's hard to do. But so speaking of expanding, how do you do that? How do you get, I know you got to have, you got Brett, but you have and Mike, who's not here, but you have sales managers who, I know their job is to get you on shelves and grocery stores and things.
Yes.
And then how do you get distribution elsewhere?
So getting in front of those that make decisions at the big places like Kroger or Walmarts or Targets is the hard thing is you've got, I mean, thousands of breweries. I mean, you worked at Slackwater. How many beer choices did you have to order from? Hundreds.
So right? many.
Yes. So all of those people are also talking to all the big boys. Right. And how do you make your product sound special? Is the hardest thing and getting.
So what's your pitch?
Well, I don't want to overplay the word local, but they do kind of see that if they sell.
I mean, it is on the can, for God's sake.
Yes.
I mean, it's like Utah and then, oh, the other one I had, I don't know where it went. I lost my
other Kolsch beer. Your Kolsch is right there.
My Kolsch, yeah, because it says it's got the logo on the logo. It's like Ogden, Utah.
Yeah.
Right there, yeah.
So our goal, we do pretty well in northern Utah and around Utah because people relate, they know what Ogden is. Getting outside the state, we've been in Boise for 2 years now, and being able to have a product that's consistent. Most of the beers we brew are not heavy. Like I like, and Brett, I think he does too, we brew beers that are a little drier. So when you drink them, you want more than one. We only have a couple beers that are kind of heavy in body and carry a lot of weight. But a fresh, clean product, a good logo, something that stands out, and obviously you have to have a good price point for people to want to do that because distribution, you know, they want to buy a beer and go home, not like buying a fancy beer at a restaurant. So being able to get all three of those things in one and have somebody take your product and trust you that you can deliver to them if they make the sale, that's kind of what we've been learning over the last 2 or 3 years. And it's going well. We've always kept the arrow going up, and we are growing, and but we don't want to try to tackle too many areas at once because then we can't keep up, you know? So being able to grow while we can keep up at the same time is kind of what we've been doing.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah, that's it's not.
So where can we find, where can we buy, where can we drink Utah now in Ogden, Salt Lake, Utah in general?
Yeah, so we are border, south to north border in Utah. We're everywhere.
Border to border?
Yep, border to border. We are in, last time I counted, probably 70 different restaurants slash bars, a handful of the ski resorts. We just got a awesome opportunity with Mavericks, so we're going to be back in their shelves starting the end of April. So we'll be in a bunch of Mavericks.
That's a Adventure's last stop.
Yes, it is.
First.
First stop in ours, but, yes.
But last
so close.
Yeah, so you'll be able to.
I could picture the little logo.
We'll be in a lot of those. We are in a handful of Targets.
I like
Harmons.
Last. Like,
yes.
Adventure's over. Let's go to Maverick. Hang out.
Start for now, in there.
It's you've been to all the others. This is like, this is your last stop right here. Right?
Grab a beer while you're there, would you? Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, and we're obviously always talking with a Walmart, and then Harmon's, they do a really good job with local craft, so
they do.
Yep.
We've had this discussion, I don't know.
Harmon's?
Todd and I, Todd and I are trying to get our podcast into Harmon's. We're just going to drive the van in there and see what happens.
We can do it on the wine and cheese night when they're teaching people.
Yeah,
yes.
We could do that.
Perfect.
Using Ogden as your brand name.
Yep.
So we started our podcast with the Ogden Arts and Adventure Show. Mm-hmm. And the thought of that was, well, could you ever sell Ogden outside of Ogden? And I was like, hell yeah, you can, you know, like Teton Sports or something.
Yep,
you could sell it like Ogden. And I'm thinking of the beer industry and one of the biggest, if not the biggest, craft, I guess, still, Sierra Nevada is named after a place, right?
Yep.
And then every time I go to a place, I look for the beer that's from the place.
Yes.
So the name of, and the local name helps me. But then I just didn't know if that hurt in distribution or not. Or how does that work?
It's a love-hate because I've had some distributors say, hey, we've tried putting a Utah brand in Idaho or Wyoming. And when people come to vacation, Jackson's a perfect example, right?
Yeah.
You land in Jackson Hole. You're on a ski trip. You're at the bar. Hey, what's local?
Yep.
You're not going to grab a Utah beer. So there's some destinations where distributors are just flat out honest. Hey, we tried it. We had a lot of people in there. It doesn't work. Like even the Sierra Nevadas, the New Belgiums, the big brand names, don't work in those really populous ski towns because everybody that comes there wants Snake River Brewing or right. something local.
Yeah.
And so that is an advantage we have here locally, because when people come to Snow Basin or Powder Mountain or, you know, go downtown Ogden,
yeah.
hey, what's local? You know, yeah. And that does help us here, but it does, you're right, it does hurt us outside the state until you can get that, you know, mega power brand name like the ones we talked about.
So, yeah, mega yeah. power brand.
yes.
Mega power
brand. We're not there yet, but I mean, we're that is what our goal is.
Yeah.
It's very long, slow process. Attention to, you know, detail, good beers, good marketing, you know, the sales team doing their job. And, you know, every day you just got to, it's, and when we open this, it's, I think I was talking to you or my partner, Jack. It's like, it's not like we took our monies and opened a Chevy dealership and we're selling Chevys, right? We're making a brand new product, brand new name.
Not easy to do.
Nothing is,
yep.
you just have to trust the people and they have to trust you, and you have to grow as fast as you can, but then also maintain it. And it's just, it's difficult, but it's a lot of fun. And it's very rewarding when you see it happening. So
you're making a push right now. You sponsor the Raptors,
Ogden Mustangs.
Ogden Mustangs.
Yep.
Screwed that one up. Ogden Mustangs. Do you have, what's your affiliation with the Mustangs?
I grew up playing hockey at the Ice Sheet.
Okay.
And then Brett knew the previous owner. What was her name? Do you remember the one that lived in California?
You just messed it up.
Yeah,
I can't think of her name. That,
yeah, okay. Anyway, he introduced me to her back in
the
2021,
owner of
the Mustangs.
Mustangs. Oh, cool.
And we were like, hey, let's do a beer for him. So we did Top Shelf. When you score a goal, Top Shelf. So it's Top Shelf IPA. And we did the Power Play Pilsner for them. And we sponsored the Mustangs. So it's 2021, probably.
2020, I think.
2020.
Started in 2020.
Yeah. And so we both play hockey and we love it. And so the rink's a great time to have a beer, and I want to support the team. And so we did that, and every year we've been doing it since. They got new owners and they're just as happy to have us. And, you know, we love working with them and being able to see the sport grow locally and, you know, get people up there it's just a lot of fun.
So. I didn't know hockey was such a big deal around here. And then same damn brother-in-law played hockey for Weber State and was apparently really good. And then when he comes into town, all those guys go up there and they get a team together and they go play like a rec game or whatever.
Yeah, they play on Thursdays.
I
go sometimes with them. And then Brett and I played on Sunday and my kids played 3 days a week. So,
well, the Ice Sheet's money.
Oh, it's awesome.
That thing is awesome.
Yeah, it's a beautiful.
Now, if they would just sell beer all the time, not just during the
yes.
Mustangs games, would be awesome.
They should just need a vending machine.
Yeah. We went to rinks in Phoenix and Vegas for my kids' tournaments, and every rink has a bar. That's awesome.
Oh, totally. Like a full service bar or just beer bar?
Full service.
Okay, so I got a question for you.
Yes.
I got a question for both of you.
It's about time.
I'm usually very quiet. And so what is your, what's the nicest way to put this? I'm just going to just come right out and say, okay. What's your relationship with the DABC?
Surprising, they are been very easy to work with. I have not.
Because they're not necessarily in the business of fully like.
No, but.
Rocking and supporting everything that we collectively like to.
That
all
is,
the time.
The rules they've had in place for a long time are tough to get rid of. I've only been in this industry for 6 or 7 years, but I grew up here, and I knew what Utah was like before the 2002 Olympics.
Sure.
A lot has changed since then. So it just takes time. And
coming back around.
Yes. And one thing that I've found is there's never, if they get rid of a rule, they always replace it with something new. So it's not like we're losing things, we're swapping things.
Oh, for sure.
And so that is hard because a lot of these things don't really make sense because their rules were made so long ago. Like having the 5% kegs. You can't have anything greater than 5% in a 64-ounce container. And that's been in the rules for like the 70s, but no one can answer why. And little things like that is like they need to, that would really help us.
It's really cost, really, because if we have to put a 5.5% beer, we can't do it in a keg anymore. Now we have to put it into a can or a bottle, and now all that product is wasteful.
Yeah.
And then instead of having it in a keg, it's just we can reuse a keg. We can't reuse a can or a bottle very easily. So it's just.
Do you have an association or a lobbying partner? Like, who talks to these people?
So the Utah Brewers Guild, that's one of the main reasons I join, is I want them, right now, if you wanted to open a bar or a restaurant, something, you've got just a couple choices. You've got a full service bar, which you can sell whatever you want, but there's no kids. You can have a tavern, which is no children, and you can only sell 5% beer or less. Or you can have a full-service restaurant where you can sell whatever you want, but only 30% of your sales can be from alcohol. 70% has to be from food, and you can have kids. Well, also with the restaurant, you can't walk around with a beer. So we're a brewery. We're all adults, and you go to any other state in the country. If you have at a brewery, you can grab a beer and walk over to your buddy and say cheers.
Right.
It's really difficult for all of us restaurant breweries to say, oh, sir, you have to sit down with your beer. You can't walk. You know, so being able to have more than three licenses to choose from.
That. You did know that.
No, I didn't know that. How in did a you restaurant, not know? You can't walk around with your
beer. I worked like, Slackwater for,
yes.
Let's just say too many years.
Too many years.
And yes. I'll be honest, I haven't found many customers that love it when I would say, hey, I need you to sit down. I can walk it for you.
Yes.
I can walk it from the bar to your table. They love that. Oh, they love that.
No, every time. I just took the 14-year-old, for God's sake, girl, wanted to go to Vegas for her birthday. Because, you know, 14-year-olds in Vegas. and we walked the strip, and you know, I have love-hate with Vegas. But it is amazing. Because, yes, you just go and grab a drink and walk down the street with it. It's like they just don't want you to take your glass. And so, like, can we pour that into a plastic cup for you or whatever? Like, can we meet in the middle somewhere on some of this stuff?
And that's what, like, the Brewers Guild, I hope, eventually does make a difference is, you know, have a fourth option or a fifth option where, okay, I'll serve wine and liquor, but I'll close at 11 and, you know, I'll give and take something, like that, you know,
Or the sizes that we're pouring the beers in. So if we're pouring a 12% beer off draft, I'll only give you a six ounce pour.
Yeah.
But let me have that option to do that.
Yep. Right. And if another thing is like, let's say you wanted to come down to Utah after this podcast and have a beer, I'd give you a beer, but like, sir, you're gonna have to get some food. So breweries, unless they're a tavern, have to offer food, but then a tavern, you're limited to that 5% thing that I talked about. Or if you're a bar, then you can do a bar, but bar licenses are hard to get and they're very expensive. So why can't we make a license that's for a brewery that has a pub, you know, that is a little bit different? Like, okay, you can walk around with a beer. You can have kids, you know, because beer is about learning. I mean, I got a 9 and a 6-year-old and they can tell you the four ingredients of a beer and what it does to you and how you make it. And having that education at a young age really prepares you when you're 18, 19, 20, making those, you know, dangerous decisions like, hey, should I drink with my buddies? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. It gives me a hangover. Yeah. A lot of kids in Utah never get any experience, and as soon as they're out in the world,
gotta hide that shit.
Wow, in trouble. So the educational side of it, we really need a different license that allows us to teach those.
Maybe they just call it that.
Yes,
they call it the beer education license.
Something
every brewery has to have signs on the wall.
Well, now that they're your situation isn't entirely unique now, so there would be a handful of people that would love that.
Yes.
License, you know.
And how do you do the bar part at your? Do I have to order food if I sit at the bar?
Yeah, because we're a restaurant. Yep.
Yeah, you just can't be a kid and sit up there.
You have to be 10 feet away if you're a kid.
So do nachos count? I guess.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Of course.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Chips or.
Yes. Yeah. We have fried chips.
We're always ours.
We had warm almonds.
Warm almonds?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the restaurant is really good. So just diverting a little bit. How did you pick your chef and get into the. Because the food's fantastic.
Yeah. Our executive chef, Chris, does an amazing job. When we opened in, we had another executive chef and he was below him. And the other guy quit after a couple months, and so Chris fell into it. And the hard part about our space is trying to create dishes when the kitchen's about the size of this van.
Yeah.
Maybe two of these.
Maybe.
And we do over 550 tickets a day on average on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And so being able to...
Dude, I didn't know that. It hurts me. The old Slackwater location was the same. The
kitchen
was
this. It's so
smaller
tiny.
Than the trailer, too.
Yeah.
The old one. And I felt every minute for back of house. And so I'm putting it out there for you and back your people.
House. Yeah, exactly. Well, they work so hard and they do so good with the limited space
of course,
they have. And, you know, on a full night, we've got 132 seats inside, 60 on the patio. Wow. And to be able to pump out.
Yeah, like washing dishes in the street? Like,
yeah. We can only put out 5 plates at a time because that's how big our expo window is. Mm-hmm. And so being able, I mean, most all customers are super understanding, be like, hey, we might get your food in 35 minutes. It's really good. You know, have a couple beers. Here's a quick appetizer. We can get those out quick.
Yeah.
But everybody's very understanding. They, especially if they've been there before and they can actually look over and see, oh yeah, they're serving out of a 5-foot window. You know what I mean? And yeah. There's 135 people here and everybody showed up at 7, you know?
Yeah.
So that is just part of our growing pain. And we've learned at our facility, you know, we do have to stagger some seating when you walk in just because you're limited with how much you can push out. So
remember I was saying earlier how much I love that old building?
Yes.
With that.
Yes.
It's that the balance.
That's the balance.
Universe of the balance.
Yeah, but they do great food.
The food is fantastic.
Yeah, it's
really good.
Top notch above bar food. Yeah. We do daily specials. We do like different beer pairing dinners. We usually do a Mother's Day thing, a Father's Day thing, all, you know, the holidays like St. Patty's. We had a couple specials that day. Mm-hmm. And very creative, and it really helps showcase the beer, and the beer helps showcase the food. So,
This is an arts and adventure podcast. So, Brett, talk to me about the art of brewing. When did you start brewing, and you know, how do you put your sweat and tears in? Well, please don't put the sweat in it.
Yeah,
don't
worry,
beer,
it boils out.
It boils out. Yeah. Talk to me about the brewing process and how much.
So my story is way different than Carson's. So I was a home brewer for 10 years before I met with Carson and convinced him to hire me. But I came from the restaurant business, so I started when I was 18 as a host at a Applebee's, I guess I can say.
Denny's?
It was Applebee's. Yeah. I was at Applebee's for 10 years and went from hosting up to management. And,
yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah, and didn't want to stay in the corporate world.
Yeah.
So I left that and actually started running a bar in the Newgate Mall, which is called About Time.
Yeah, I know the bar. Okay.
They just barely closed down.
Did they really?
Yeah, just a couple of weeks ago.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Huh. Hopefully they come back, but I think it's mostly because of the mall.
Yeah.
Going downhill down there, but I got tired of the restaurant business and
you're back in it. Got it.
Kind of got back into it. My wife told me to go do something fun, so I would start working at Epic. But I'm from Ogden, so I didn't want to keep driving to Salt Lake.
Yeah,
and convinced Carson that I knew what I was doing and could help him grow the business. So showed my skills and he taught me his ways and.
Carson,
the whole process.
I'm not a chef or anything, let alone a brewer. And so when you start giving recipes to somebody, like that's got to be like a little bit of panic, right? Like, can they do it as good as me sort of thing, right?
It is. Brett did a great job. Obviously, it's like handing over your baby. You know, you're not going to do it till you have confidence, and then you're going to sit there and watch and watch and test, and then you're slowly start stepping away. But that's what I prefer. I mean, like I said, I only have about 5 years under my belt of running a business, but I love bringing in those that are new, green. Just like my GM now, she's never ran anything, but she does a phenomenal job. So it's almost better to have somebody with very little or no experience and kind of grow with you because you're on the same page. You know what I mean? Like you're learning together. If there's a problem, we can all come and talk and be like, you know, let's try it this way.
Yeah.
Where if you get somebody with all this experience, you're like, well, this is how we used to do it. Well, they didn't work in a building built in 1906 with a pit and a 5-foot kitchen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so being able to grow together from ground zero and do it our way instead of somebody else's way, I think that's one of the reasons we've done so well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And Carson didn't just let me start brewing. He really followed me the whole way, which was great. Like I wouldn't have ever been able to do what I'm doing now without how he taught me on the system and the knowledge that he had with homebrewing, the way he homebrewed compared to how I homebrewed, it just...
Yeah, there's no right or wrong.
Yeah, it's just how we've learned. Yeah. And with the home or with the brewing community as it is right now, I can call any of the brewers from Salt Lake to Logan and they can help me out with anything. They'll give me product. They can give me knowledge.
That's awesome.
There's not a lot of secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or are there?
There are. We're not telling you what those secrets are.
Yes. Yes.
Well, we want to say thank you for sponsoring Van Sessions.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the opportunity, too.
Huge deal for us. It's something that it was a labor of love for years. And then just kind of like COVID, too. And when COVID happened, we started doing video because, you know, like, well, oh, my gosh, everybody did video and we got to do video. And then it started kind of blowing up. And so and then we moved to the Monarch. One of our first moves, because the Union Station famously, this is previous management there, wanted to charge us for power to do to park the van, and we had to shovel the snow so Todd would have a place to sit out there. It was rough for years, as far as that goes.
The things you do for the things you love.
For the things you love, yeah. And so we've been at it a long time, and I'm passionate about it because when we talk to the musicians, and that's a hard gig there to be a professional musician. I don't really know that.
Or getting your start as a musician.
Yeah, I mean, it is wild. And then we had a bar that was all ages that, not a bar, but I guess was it a bar? I don't think, but it was a venue that closed down. And when that closed down, there was no place for these kids to sort of play and train.
Mojos?
And work.
Was it Mojos?
Yeah.
Brett was a drummer for a
while. Yeah.
Yeah. So when that closed, there was nowhere to go. And that's why we have like Shane Osgathorpe of The Proper Way, who says van sessions is the best thing outside, even better than OFOM, because these kids don't have a place to practice and do the thing. That said, we got standards. So Todd books everything, and Todd's got some standards, and we're out months. Like,
that's sick.
6 months or so to get on the show now, because, nice. You know, you can't. But that doesn't mean if you're a new band, you can't make it. You just got to send us what you're doing to make sure you're good, you know?
That's like the quality of your beer.
You got
to
be picky.
Start to have a standard.
You got to have a standard.
Exactly. Plus, it also gives bands an opportunity, and we've had a few that have followed the show now because we've been doing it for 7-8 years, that show, I think.
We're going on year 8. Yeah.
8 years, so that it's not like they became musicians for van sessions, but they have been like practicing and getting better, and they changed bands, and they have always had the sight in mind of performing on this local van session show. And so we had one or two last year, and I'll tell you what, it feels good.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It feels good that we have the opportunity and then we're not going anywhere so that they can continue to get better, but that they also took, you know, our notes, which was essentially, you know, keep doing what you're doing and come hang out with us.
Yes, yeah.
Well, what it is, it's a family that's been created with all of these years of musicians. And so many of these bands and individual musicians will come and watch and support and take notes and get better, essentially, through relationships, maybe get some other gigs. And so it has been a trip. Been a trip. But we are definitely at that point where we're out almost through September, like, of this year.
Nice. That's
cool. Yeah. And Logan has a good scene. Provo Orm has a good scene. Ogden does not have a good, or hasn't, has a good music scene. And lack of a venue is a big problem there. Mm-hmm. So Van Sessions is filling the gap a little bit. But I asked the question for years, how do you guys break, like, how in the hell do you get, like, how do you go from playing in Ogden to, because there's the internet and all this kind of stuff now, and no one really has a good answer. You know, they're like, well, we just play music. And like, I'm like, okay, so then that way, when at least the fact that we video record it and we give them 5-6 videos that they can use to send people to help them book gigs, it really helps give them a platform to send to other people and stuff. And so it's a good step for a lot of bands. But we're getting, like Todd said, a lot of the bands that are some of the better bands in the state are now like doing specific sets for van sessions. They know they've got the date and they're really, really good bands. And they're like, okay, we're going to do this.
That's cool.
Cause they know it's not being videoed and they know they better perform and play their best. And so anyway, thanks so much for sponsoring the show. Welcome. I love it.
It keeps getting better.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. It's a really cool thing you guys are doing.
Awesome. So. Thanks so much. Todd, did you have any arts news?
I do. Quick update on, speaking of Salt Lake City, I work with the Salt Lake City Arts Council and run a gallery named Finch Lane Gallery down in Salt Lake. And so we have a brand new show. The opening reception was this past Friday, very well attended. It is two artists named Downey Doxy Williams and Laura Sharp Wilson. Really good stuff. It's a great spring show. So if you're, you know, just spring. Like me, because now that it is officially spring,
yes,
I do. I like winter, but I mostly love spring. So so this is a great spring show for us. And then a quick heads up, the call for entries for exhibitions for 2025. So I'm currently booked through 2024 in the gallery. So for 2025 is March 25th. So that's next Monday. So if you hear this and you're thinking about showing your work down in Salt Lake, you just have to be an artist in Utah. Look up saltlakearts.org. So you'll find all the information that you need, or reach out to me.
Awesome.
Cool.
I am DJing, God, Lord help me, the Turn and Burn up at Powder Mountain. So, and by DJ, loose terms, I'm just playing some good music. I got to go home and work on my transitions tonight. So, nice.
Do you got the little foghorn?
I got Yeah, I have one of those here, one of those buttons here. But that's awesome. Turn and Burn's coming, and then they do a second race, and I can't remember the name of that one either. For those who like to tele ski, so but they're going to use the same course as the Turn and Burn, and the Turn and Burn is for snowboarders, mm-hmm. and it's like a whatever slalom course essentially for nice. Up at Powder Mountain. So that is the 30th, and then the following Saturday, I believe it's April 6th, is the tele ski one. So if anyone is out there who really wants to. And it's a competition, but really, is it really? It's basically a party all day.
That's awesome.
So I'll be DJing those two events. Come say hi if you're in the area. So I want to say thanks again to both of y'all, Carson and Brett, for coming in. Carson, I appreciate getting to know you better.
Yeah.
Brett, there was something I was going to ask you, and now I don't remember. But that's what I was going to say. It was catch Brett on. You got little updates once a week or once a month or something on your.
We try to do beers with Brett. We're going to try and do them
beers with Brett
that's once a month. That's we'll try and get them out there. But yeah, if you have any questions about beer or about Utah, just shoot us a message on the socials, really, and we'll get back to you and do some videos about it.
Beers with Brett. Yeah. See, you podcast and don't even know. thank you to Banyan One. That is this trailer here for powering today's episode of the Ogden Arts and Adventure Show. You can listen and subscribe to Ogden Arts and Adventure on YouTube. Look for us on Facebook, Instagram, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and thebanyancollective.com. If you want to be on the show, you can DM us on Instagram at Ogden Adventure. This is, we'll take you out with some Van Sessions. This is a song called Regroup. From Bad Luck Brigade, as recorded.
They're so good.
I know.
He is so good.
Yeah.
It's like a little Beastie Boys, little Mixmaster rap. Oh, gosh, I've been listening to this over and over.
No, he's phenomenal. So this is Regroup by Bad Luck Brigade, as recorded on Van Sessions. We'll see you on the next Ogden Arts and Adventure show.
Small lunch, so I stay smart with no brains, so to tell truth with four tongues. Bad Luck Brigade on Van Sessions.